This is a treat. This is a young man that I loved before he was married. I didn't have to quit because he got married, because she's not the slightest bit jealous of me. I don't understand it. So I continue to love her husband. It's okay. He's a wonderful, wonderful young man. He's a writer. Just happened to get one of the neatest ladies on this earth to be his wife. I don't know how he did that. Begged, coaxed, I'm not sure what. Maybe he promised to keep your shoes shiny.
I'm not sure.
But anyhow, he's wonderful, and this is our Steve Cook.
Hi, everyone. Everybody, my brother a week and a half ago had a heart attack at 44 years old. So he's well. He's got two stents in his heart. He's home. He's trying to figure out what it means to change your lifestyle so you can reduce the stress and all these other things. I haven't checked in with him yesterday or today. He went to see his primary caregiver and also his cardiologist, and he's just awash in everything he needs to learn right now. And I go as often as I can and spend time with him and give him love and support and try not to be too preachy about what I think is a good lifestyle and let him figure it out. But he's doing well.
You know, yeah, he's got tension in his job because he's a lawyer. I would never be able to handle that.
Yeah.
So sending lots of love.
Yeah, it's actually a good time for him to have a heart attack. I mean, if you have to have one, his office is consolidating and moving, and he can't be there. So he has to relax and let someone else deal with it. Yeah, because if he didn't have it before that, he'd certainly have it afterwards.
You planned it at the right time.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You planned it at the right time. He takes after
his brother. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was an eye-opener. It was an eye-opener. So I've stood here before you all a couple of times in the past, and it's always difficult to pick the right topic to talk about. And the reason is because I want to honor you. It's not just I want to talk about something that's important to me or that I find interesting. So before I begin to share, I want to take a moment and go ahead and honor you. I want to begin by telling you what you have knowingly and unknowingly shared with me. I see each of you doing and being who you are here at church and working through your own life's journey. I don't know the specifics of what your journey is about, but I do wish I could spend a day with each one of you and see you in action, truly. From what I've gathered from all of you, you have great spirit, you have perseverance, you have steadfastness, you have brilliance, and you have charm. You may not see this in yourselves because you're you, and you can only see what you can see. And I know that kind of sounds silly, but you know your successes, you know your breakthroughs, you know your miracles, you know your shortcomings, you know your frustrations, and you also know your failures. You know the jobs you've had, you know the ones that got away, you know your children, you know your family, you know your parents. You know your relationships that have succeeded and the ones that have failed. And the list goes on. I mean, there's milestones everywhere. But what you may not see amongst all of those milestones is the story of you. How your character, how your guides, and how your love has brought you through all your trials. As a writer, I see who you are, and it doesn't take much. How time and life have unfolded for you and creating the being in front of me, here, now. I see the result of your journey, who you've become to this point, and I'm impressed. As you sit here before me, you are the hero of your journey, and I hope you realize that. Think about it. Think about all the trials you've overcome to be here, now, sitting in the seat you're sitting in. Think of all the many events and circumstances. I'd like you all to go back to your childhood for a moment, to your adolescence, your schooling, your young adulthood, your family life, your work life, your vacations, the close calls, the heartache, the good cheer, and congratulate yourself and honor yourself for being here. Instead of sharing a chapter of my book with you, which might bore you to death and it may not, I thought I'd just share some of the principles that are guiding the writing of the book. My subject is mastery, and the working title is Practices, How Each of Us May Grow to Be Masters. Then midlife set in the other day, and you just heard about my brother's heart attack, and I also had knee surgery. But even though my hair is thinning and graying, I hadn't thought of myself as middle-aged. And what struck me a couple of days after my brother's heart attack and my knee surgery and was really the culmination of time. If not now, when? When will I gain clarity about myself? When will I be the person I dream of becoming? When will I be satisfied and accepting of all that I am? An urgency had set in that had made my book just that much more important to me. So tonight, I'll briefly share three topics with you that have guided me this far. The first will be self-will, or God, what do I do now? I'm in control of my life, right? None of you wants that responsibility, do you? You've got enough on your plates, I'm sure. So it's up to me and my free will. I often feel I know what's best for me. I plan, I think, I plan some more, and then I do what I think's right. Time passes, and I wonder why I'm no longer fulfilled, or that I was never fulfilled in the first place. Let me give you an example. In graduate school, and this is back in the dark ages, I got a job tutoring children in reading, writing, and learning skills. I loved it. For me, it was play. Every day, I'd go in knowing I was going to have the privilege of working with these children. My table was loud. It was busy. It was filled with laughter. We got crazy on education. I ate it up, and so did the kids. The instructors and the center manager were concerned with my teaching style, but they loved the results. Soon, I was promoted, and I was offered a job with another division inside the firm. It was a big leap. Others around me suggested that I not take the job. I just couldn't see why. It didn't make any sense to me. I was expanding, growing, learning, taking on more responsibility, and becoming an educator. This was my vision, after all. I wanted to be part of a revolution in education, and I thought I was leading that revolution. The kids loved me, and my results with them were good, even great. So why not move ahead? I took the job. I drove over an hour every morning and evening into a severely economically depressed neighborhood in South Central Los Angeles. Eventually, I landed at an elementary school in Compton. Within a year, I was up and rolling. Again, the kids loved me. The test results were there to prove that I was effective. The children and I suffered through some harrowing experiences, lockdowns due to drive-by shootings, murder, drug addiction, and we persevered. We learned our ABCs amidst the flying bullets, blood spatters, threats, and a level of anger that often spilled into the classroom. After 2 years of this, corporate came to town and evaluated our performance. They didn't like what they saw in me. I was a square peg in a round hole, and I didn't see it. They did. My technique was unconventional, to say the least. My paperwork was in order. The kids were performing, but I was not a team player. I was not towing the corporate line. I was swimming upstream, and I didn't know it. They believed, of all things, I was a union labor organizer trying to undermine their authority, and I was offered the opportunity to resign. I had so many individual successes, though, with the children, that I couldn't see how I could go wrong or what was wrong with my path. Eventually, I resigned under threats of being fired, and if they knew me, they would have realized the impossibility of what they were saying and what they believed I was up to. And that's what I believed. So what went wrong? Although as I was giving myself to children, in which I believe is a noble cause, I was not doing it for them. I was doing it for the light that shined on me, my vainglorious revolution and education and my vanity. I was the one who was dreaming. The nudge out the door was, I believe, an opportunity for me to reevaluate my purpose and my dreams. This realization, this growth, was not to come to fruition for quite some years, in fact, maybe even a decade later. In the moment, faced with disappointment, it's a grand effort of open-mindedness to see what God's objective may be. What I learned from this is that self-will is rigid and determined, and that desire feeds desire. The cycle of desire and self-will can only be interrupted by selfless action. Selfless action is straightforward. It's giving without scheming for something in return. It cuts away at the root of desire, and it would have allowed me to come back to the noble goal of teaching children for their betterment only. However, I chose not to go back to education. Above all, I realized I was not right. I was not always right and not on the right path. Yes, I believe that each and every one of us has a path, a journey we're on. And we each are in control of our destiny. We are at liberty to shape our journey. God will not stop us. This is what it is to have free will. In my case, I ran counter to God. My free will had me looking into the limelight, wanting to be a star. The good news is that no one can escape free will, running counter to God. It's inevitable. It's human. Where we place the blame and the potential growth is in realizing that the blame is ours. Take a situation that turned out bad and embrace it. That's growth. This is how I began to understand that to get beyond my self-will and desire, I needed to reach beyond myself and my desires. We all have heard of pain and growth, growing pains, no pain, no gain. These are not just catchphrases of a driven society. As a matter of fact, they're an acknowledgement of becoming your own confidant and advisor. The second topic is prayer and faith, or spending an evening looking up into the night sky. When things go wrong, like my job teaching, I wondered for a long time, why me? I spent a lot of time being resentful and spiteful until I reached my understanding. I didn't begin to understand what had happened to me until I began to ask God and have a little faith that I would have the grace to understand what had happened. Finally, when I was able to understand God's will, I believe I was being asked to demonstrate a new and deeper sense of faith. That is, I was being asked to demonstrate greater love and selfless giving, to acknowledge that I understand my life's purpose and what my journey is. Through prayer and faith, I gained a heightened sense of awareness. I have a greater sense of being on my path and seeking growth and awareness of my journey due to that experience. I learned that choosing my God-guided purpose over self-will provides a knowing that through God and prayer, the right action, word, thought, and words will be there. Through prayer and faith, I asked for my strength to believe in. Through prayer and faith, I asked for my strength to believe in the face of my human limitations and even disappointment that I would have the patience for my journey to unfold in its time. Essentially, I asked for a reminder of my promise to God before I entered the flesh, the knowledge of God's will, and the strength to carry it out. We humans are funny. We yearn for an end to growth, a final resting place when we're still in the flesh. We ask, can and will it all end? Can the craziness just stop? Can I capture this moment and hold it for a long time, maybe forever? Some of us have spent our lives waiting for that moment to come. Sometimes I want my life to be a finished product, my spiritual life to be a finished product. Not a process, but something polished and refined, something I can set on the shelf, a thing of beauty that I can admire. Yet, I know in my heart that we're never finished. Remember that even God had Jesus to spare. His darkest night was just prior to his crossing over. And what does that tell us? There's no finish line. There's no race to run. There's no place to get to. So I accept that I can never will an outcome, force a result, and still be holding God's finger. The power of prayer is the only mechanism through which my self-will can alchemically mutate into something malleable and God-centered. I love that sentence. I apologize for putting it in there, but I just love it. Okay. The power of prayer is the only mechanism through which my self-will can be alchemically mutated into something malleable and God-centered, something that can be worked with as opposed to standing willfully and righteously alone. I accept that I am not always right, and in a way, I am relieved to know that everything is open-ended and truth is spelled with a small t. For me, many times faith has come down to a sense of direction. This or that, left or right, do I, don't I? It helps me to think of faith coming in small actions or increments, to be taken as the next right step, not some far-flung ideal way out there. Make no mistake, our prayers do lead us somewhere. We may think that we're praying into a void at times, and that God is not listening. We may feel as though our prayers have failed, but often we're praying for things that we're not ready for, we're not prepared for, we just don't need. So keeping it close and knowing the journey is still moving forward are at the heart of prayer and faith for me. The third point is vibration. Just how important is it? We are listening. And within lies that divine spark that does know where it is we must go and what it is we must do there. The kingdom of God is within. Each of us is the divine spark in the flesh, the green spark of life. We are listening carefully, waiting for the moment when the world is right, when our purpose and our journey join, and what we promised God materializes. What I didn't realize until recently was that my esteem, my self-love, was generated through my hardships. The trial itself, the process, not the outcome, was important. Who I was being in the face of my trial, how could I declare a disastrous success? It's all in the listening. It's easy to imagine an alien with no ears. But it's difficult to imagine a species that had no ability to sense vibrating objects. Since we all live, we must be in an atmosphere. And in an atmosphere, there are molecules that vibrate in response to movement, auditory or otherwise. Our other option is to live in a vacuum. But the definition of a vacuum is a space devoid of anything. In a vacuum, there can be no life. So that leads us back to molecules existing in atmospheres. I know this is very scientific, but it's leading somewhere. Any organism that evolved in a world with vibrating objects is likely to have a processing unit that incorporates these movements and vibrations of the world. So what is vibration? Vibration is the back and forth of something over time. As sound, we call these vibrations frequencies. Different frequencies are referred to as tones. Tone is so important. It's so important. And this blew me away when I realized this. And I didn't come up with it. I read this in many places. But it's so important to our brain that it represents it directly. It's the only thing that our brains do directly. What I mean is, if a researcher were to put electrodes in the brain of a person to whom a tone is being played, we would be able to determine that tone just by looking at the brain activity. Now, you can't do that with an apple. You can't do that with pressure on your hand, but you can do it with a tone. Neurons in the auditory cortex will fire at precisely that frequency. What goes in the ear comes out in the brain. Vibration and frequency are so important that it is the only sense we have that directly tells us what is happening around us in the world. It is pure and it's true. So when Millie asks us to raise our love vibration, or tells us that our love vibration is the only thing that we get to take with us when we cross, or tells us to take care and only let in music and movies and conversations that are uplifting, she is reminding us that vibration is a precious thing. She didn't need science to back her play, but it has. Our connection with the spiritual world is through the purest and truest way that our brains and bodies can communicate with the world and the spirits around us. So listen carefully. And know we are never below the dignity of God to pray. For God loves us because who he is, not because of something we did or didn't do. I pray and grow my faith. Since it is not about the outcome, the key to aging gracefully is knowing that everything has its time. What we all have in common is the ability to live in an open-ended state of interpretation and reinterpretation of the products of our lives. We have the ability to have a number of projects going on at once in various stages of incompletion. We have the ability to live within structures and reinterpret those as needed. The key here is the open-endedness. Truth, by its very nature, is contextual and changeable. Dependent on one's point of view, today's truths become yesterday's disproven assumptions. The goal of living is not to convey literal truth, but to convey truth as an aspect of the universal. And if successful, that truth will continue to move and touch people, even as the world around us changes. Thank you.